Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
All right, 657 Medium Wave, Radio Pulpit, Visiothon 2025. And I'm squatting here at Lupus.
You're squatting?
Yeah, at Lupus.
Really now?
Yes.
No, Pastor Ray. Oh, man, still having a great time. It's Visiothon week. And we are basically just asking you to join hands with us. Yeah. I was just thinking, like we were talking earlier on, Pastor Ray, Wuti, you know, oftentimes we are on our phones. You know, we're in the world or in the space of the internet. And the truth is, before we know it, Lama Radio is now, like Reverend Carol was saying, are no longer going to work. So it's time for us to move with the times. So we're really inviting you to be part of the solution. All you need to do is SMS GIVE, G-I-V-E, to the number 37871. Or you can write GIVE on WhatsApp, 082-657-2729.
Yeah, absolutely there. And of course, the health talk.
Yeah, with Charlene Naidu.
Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy health talks?
I do, actually. Mm. I think especially because we're not
immune. Do you like it when they tell you what to eat? Are you aware that I'm interrupting your answers?
I don't, but I know how essential it is.
Okay. So you keep the knowledge in the abstract.
No, but I do utilize it sometimes, but there are sometimes where I become rebellious.
I understand. You're not alone. Just wanted to tell you, you're not alone. All right, let's listen to it.
And I'm so glad we get to have this conversation, because you remember last week we had some real technological difficulties, but it's not a big deal because Charlene is ready once again. Now, you know, we were talking last week, or we were meant to actually speak on mental health, anxiety, that is, and got some shocking stats, I must say, because with the general population, apparently depression and anxiety are among the most prevalent mental health disorders in South Africa, affecting a significant portion of the population. But also that with university students, a 2023 national survey found that 37.1% of South African university students experienced an anxiety disorder in the past 30 days. Yep, you heard me right. Here's another shocking one for me, I must say, because I didn't expect this age group to be having, you know, such known mental, I don't say mental issues, but we always think they're kids. What do they know? But adolescents in the Western Cape, a 2024 study revealed a notable levels of anxiety and depression among young adolescents aged 10 to 14 in the Western Cape province. Shocking, I must say. But before we even have a bit of a chat on that with Charlene, let me just say hi to you, my lady.
Hello, Luca. It's so nice to join today.
Oh, finally, we get you in.
We definitely had our own session last week, right, of anxiety with those technical difficulties. But thankfully, we're sorted today, fingers crossed. And I think it's a really good topic to get into, especially just looking at those stats you've just mentioned.
Yeah, listen, it's quite shocking stats, I must say, Charlene. But with that, I think let's start here before we really really just look into them. What do you mean by anxiety versus just being worried? Because I know we loosely use these terms. I know we were also quite anxious last week, like you said. So how do we differentiate the two, Charlene?
Yes, I think this is a very important distinction. I mean, last week's example was quite good because it was linked to something short term. You know, we were having those technical difficulties, but that was more a worry related to that situation for those 20 to 30 minutes.
Mm.
So I think that's how we can start to understand anxiety versus just being worried, because I think, Luca, it's also easy to brush someone off when they talk about being anxious, because to you, you're probably thinking, well, we all get worried about certain things at certain times.
Yeah.
That's normal. Mm. So what do you mean that you're having anxiety?
Mm.
So generalized anxiety disorder, it's kind of this very intense version of worry, because worry is a natural component of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But as we said, it's that very, not very, but it's usually linked to something short term. So say You've got an amazing interview tomorrow for your dream job. So you might be worried about your presentation skills, about how you're going to come across during the interview. So that's a real life situation. But once the interview is over, that worry kind of dissipates.
Yeah.
Now, anxiety, on the other hand, it's more intense. It's more long lasting. This is the tricky part of it and the frustrating part. It starts to affect you, like, even when there's no clear problem, it feels like you're on edge all the time. That something bad is about to happen, even when things are mostly okay. And that can really start to mess with your everyday quality of life, you know. You don't sleep properly. You feel like your heart is racing all the time. You feel like you can't concentrate and focus at work. And that's when we say that it's starting to affect your quality of life, because it's actually causing you to feel sad and panicky and frustrated all the time. And there's almost no clear reason behind it. I do want to say that it's not that there's always no clear reason behind it. Lots of people are anxious about very valid things.
Yeah.
But we're talking about anxiety where it's constant, it's overwhelming, it gets in the way of you living your life. And that when it becomes this full-blown anxiety disorder, and it really takes a toll on you.
Is it fair, Charlene, to say overthinkers literally live in anxiety for most of their lives? Because, you know, those people that overthink every single thing, and they'll panic and get into a ball through it. Could we categorize them as warriors or people with anxiety?
Listen, I think, because I'm one of those people, and I wish someone would give me a prize for this. I wish every time I overthink about something, my bank account would fill up or something.
You'd be rich by now.
I'm telling you, I would win the gold medal in the overthinking Olympics. But this is one of the things, you know, there are certain personalities that are very prone to overthinking, to having a higher risk factor for anxiety. And it's definitely, you know, those personalities that tend to overthink things. They spend a lot of time in their own mind and just kind of ruminating on things and going in these endless circles. There's personalities, you know, who are very high functioning, who tend to be very perfectionistic. You know, they need things a certain way. And they put a lot of pressure on themselves. So that's definitely one of those personalities, or the few of those personalities, that tend to just have a higher risk for anxiety. But honestly, Luko, it can affect anybody. And, you know, I really want to stress that part of removing the stigma about it is to take away the thing about, but what do you have to be anxious about?
Exactly. Now let's take a little step back, Charlene, to our stats earlier on. Just looking at our stats, why does it seem as if more people than ever are anxious?
Gosh, I mean, I know. It really feels like most of the world is on edge. I feel like we're all just one thread away from an anxiety attack every single day. So I'm going to come to social media now, but I just want to look at, like, the really big stuff that we go through, okay?
Yeah.
We have lived through a pandemic. There's economic stress. There's political drama. There's climate change. There's crime. There are literally wars going on incessantly across the world. There's natural disasters. It's this endless rabbit hole. And these environmental factors, and I think we've now had it for the last decade or so, where we kind of have real-time access to breaking news.
Yeah.
So we can see and hear absolutely everything that's happening in real time. So if there's a war that's breaking out somewhere, you know about it in literally as it's happening.
Yeah.
If there's a crime that's happening in your town or your city, you hear about it through WhatsApp groups, through alerts. So we're constantly living through these crazy information overload. It's sensory overload. I mean, just looking at that alone, I don't even know how anyone cannot be anxious.
Sure.
Then we have to go to, you know, we've spoken about it before. We've spoken about social media. We are constantly plugged in. We've got our phones buzzing. We've got emails piling up. We've got social media showing us, you know, how everyone's life looks so great and why doesn't your life look like this? And it's exhausting. It makes us feel like we're not doing enough or we're behind the curve. So there's something to be anxious about.
Yeah.
And I think also it's nice that we're now finally talking openly about mental health, but it also means that more people are recognizing the anxiety and naming it. So now we're kind of stuck in this convoluted melting pot. There's so many things going on. And I really think, I mean, you've probably experienced this also. If you had to meet 10 people today, probably 8 of those people would say that they have anxiety.
Yeah, that's true. A huge number, actually. So I think you beat me to that because I was about to ask if social media does actually play a role in that.
Definitely. I mean, I really, really think social media has a lot to answer for. I think it can seriously mess with our anxiety levels because, you know, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it keeps us connected, but then it can pull you into this thing about the comparison trap, you know. You see everybody else's lives. You get their updates about their new jobs, their new businesses. There's all sorts of studies that talk about how social media increases our feelings of inadequacy and anxiety. Going back to your stat about, you know, especially in younger people, because the thing with image-based social media where these visuals are such a big part of the selling of it is that it starts to promote those feelings of, but I don't look like that and that's not happening in my life. And that's when you get those feelings of inadequacy. And if you think about it, how many young kids are on social media from a really young age? You know, it's the tablet generation. They know how to use cell phones. They know how to scroll on a tablet. They have access to just being online constantly. So their anxiety, unfortunately, is starting off really, really young. And unfortunately, social media does have a huge part in that.
That's true. You're actually reminding me, a couple of weeks ago, I had an interview with the Child Protection, I think, hotline. And we were talking about just how much the children are more exposed now than before. You know, how back in the day, we had to search for things. For instance, one big argument is children nowadays are more exposed to pornographic things, whereas back in the day, you had to be curious and go searching for it. Nowadays, they get on the phone and it's a pop-up on their cell phone.
It's so easily accessible. It's scary, actually, how easily accessible it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that point we said earlier about how we're exposed to the news that's happening immediately in the world anywhere. Kids are also exposed to that. Remember, they're also getting those updates and those alerts. They can also see, look, there's crime happening, there's this happening or whatever. So their anxiety, whereas for us, I think like the older generation, we grew up with a different kind of legacy media where you'd read something in a newspaper or in a magazine.
But so
those kind of hard news events were a little more detached from our reality. But kids of all ages, you know, a 5-6-year-old child, you know, they've heard things like crime. They've heard things like there's a war happening. They've heard things like, you know, climate control and climate change. So,
and they understand them, Charlene. It's unlike us who had to think things through a lot. These kids know everything.
It's very, very scary how exposed they are. And unfortunately, it is affecting their mental well-being at such an early age.
Sure. I think I do encourage personal conversations, Charlene. Just as I was stopping this afternoon, I was thinking to myself, I've got a speaking engagement for a platform a cousin of mine has created called Mumming by Grace. And she wants me to share my journey of being a new mommy to twins. And as I was just, you know, prepping in my spirit, I thought to myself, in order for me to cope, I've had to also have these conversations that you'd love ABC, but the fact that you don't have it doesn't mean you're failing as a mom. It's just a desire of yours. And whether you catch up with this much later on in life, the fact of the matter is that as a mom, you're doing great. You're doing the basics of what it means to give your child a fair, good life. You're doing that. So throw all these things behind you. So, absolutely. And it's all because of social media that I feel that desire and that pressure, because I see, you know, nice photo shoots and what, and my kids are turning two next month. I'm like, okay, what should I do? Can I afford it? But I'm like, actually, no, don't stress about that. You're not failing.
And see, it's passing on that anxiety to you, because it's exactly that comparison trap of, well, that mom has done it, that parent is doing this. You know, should I be doing that as well? Am I shortchanging my child if I'm not doing it? Mm. And now you've taken on that anxiety.
Yeah.
Your child, by some transference, might also feel that anxiety. And I think, just, you know, not to keep bashing social media, because it sounds like we are. But whatever is on social media in terms of what their parents share, what parents share about their kids as well, you know, you have to be, think, age appropriate as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much of it comes down to what are you exposing your child to? When you're sharing your kids' pictures and, you know, videos or whatever, your child doesn't actually have a say in it as yet. If they're young enough, for instance. So there's so much of that that goes into it. And that's why it comes down to you as a mom and as a parent. You have to make that decision for what feels comfortable to you. And if you're comparing it to another parent, but it doesn't sit right with you, that's not for you. So you're not behind the curve. You're doing what's appropriate for yourself and your child.
That's true. Now, tell me, Charlene, realistically speaking, does anxiety actually affect someone's everyday life? Like, let's say your work, relationships, etc. Does it have any effect on those?
So for some people, this is the tricky thing with anxiety, because it kind of becomes this background noise, like a low level kind of thing that's happening in the background. And it doesn't really stop them from getting things done. Like, they'll get their work done, they'll socialize with people, they'll have good relationships and whatever, but it's kind of like this, this background noise that's going on. For other people, especially, you know, these high functioning people, anxiety becomes very intense, and it makes work, it makes relationships, it makes even simple daily tasks extremely challenging to navigate. Someone who's got a very intense form of anxiety, you know, they might avoid things like just driving in a car because they're already anxious about the road that they've got to take. They're anxious about the traffic, and they start to avoid these things. Someone who has anxiety about being in social settings, you know, they start to get scared of being in groups that, you know, have like 5 or 6 people in it. They start to get worried, like, okay, I can't escape if I need to. And as we're talking about it, as you're listening to it, you might think that that's so irrational. But this is their personal experience. And this is now because, unfortunately, the anxiety has kind of escalated to this level. They probably haven't done enough to manage it. You know, maybe they haven't tried therapy or counseling or medication or lifestyle changes. It can lead people to becoming very irritable. They become withdrawn. They become really worried about what other people think about them. They'll have trouble opening up. So that creates this physical and emotional distance from people. So it really starts to affect your life on a micro level, where that example about, you know, sitting in traffic, you start getting worried about that. You start getting anxious about answering your phone because you are trying to detach yourself from people and talking. So it seems like, oh, but those are small things. But you can see now, over time, it becomes this very harmful pattern. And then it starts to affect, you don't want to interact with people. It starts to affect your sleeping patterns. You are constantly tired. And it's just, it can become so detrimental to your overall well-being that you have to try and manage it.
Sure. Very interesting, I must say. So do we have to worry about physical symptoms of anxiety, or, you know, the effects of anxiety on physical health?
Unfortunately, we definitely have to worry about that.
Sure.
So when the anxiety kicks in, your body basically goes into that fight or flight mode, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's when you might notice your heart is racing, your muscles are tightening, you feel some sweating, you might feel dizzy, you might feel short of breath. And this happens basically because your brain signals to your body to release stress hormones to prepare you to react quickly to danger.
Mm.
Now, those physical symptoms are totally normal and helpful if you are actually in a scary situation. But someone who's a high-functioning, anxious person, when they're in the state of heightened alertness day after day, this means that their body is basically stuck in the stress response kind of all the time. And that's never, ever going to be healthy. So this long-term exposure to those stress hormones, it starts to wear your body down in so many ways.
Sure.
It can increase your risk of developing heart problems. It can raise your blood pressure. It can weaken your immune system. So now you're more vulnerable to infections and getting sick all the time. You get headaches, you get neck pain, you get backaches. I know so many people as well who deal with anxiety. They find that it affects their digestive system.
Yeah.
So now suddenly, you know, you've got stomach aches and nausea and irritable bowel syndrome. So you really, really do have to kind of pay attention to the fact it's not just in the mind.
Mm.
It is going to bleed over into your physical symptoms.
Sure, scary stuff. But now tell me, Charlene, why do some people develop anxiety disorders while others don't, even in similar situations?
You know, so this might sound funny, but for me personally, I like to think of it how, I don't know about you, but a mosquito will always fight me. Wherever I am, I will always get bitten by a mosquito.
That's my dad.
But yet, literally, someone standing next to me will be completely immune. They'll be like, what mosquito? There's nothing. I don't even see it. Mm. So it's totally not fair, but, you know, that's genetics and something at play. So with anxiety, I mean, obviously, that was a very simplistic correlation. But with so many physical condition, health conditions and mental conditions, there's common factors like your biology, your life experience, how your brain works. So genetics, for instance, if you have family members with anxiety or mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
now you might unfortunately be more at risk to develop anxiety yourself.
Mm.
Now, that's not a guarantee, of course, but it's just that you likely have a higher chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there are life experiences. Now, if you've gone through a lot of stressful or traumatic events in your life, like from childhood, ongoing stress, just very, very deep and intense stressful experiences, that does increase your risk, especially if you've never learned how to cope with that stress over time.
Mm.
So this is why, you know, and I think I mentioned it on a segment a while ago that, you know, doctors will always give very boring advice that we know, that we've grown up hearing about eat a healthy diet, get plenty of exercise, manage your stress. And it's boring because it's true. If you've never learned how to deal with those traumatic events and you've just kept saying, it's okay, I'm dealing with it, on to the next. That means that your brain chemistry has also now altered, you know.
Mm.
You are used to, you think you're used to dealing with it, but actually what it's done is it's led you to this state of being constantly in this space of high anxiety. We spoke about the perfectionistic people, you know, people who tend to be more perfectionistic, who are highly sensitive, people who kind of expect the worst to happen. You know, they kind of are a little more cynical. They're kind of a little more pessimistic. They are more prone to anxiety. So even if two people, you know, you and I can face the same challenge, but our combination of genetics, brain function, life experiences, your personality, my personality, it all plays a role into whether I would develop an anxiety disorder or not, and vice versa.
Makes sense. Definitely makes sense.
Yeah. It comes down to kind of all of that. So I think this is why, if we can take away anything from it, is really find a way to deal with those stresses and those trauma and the difficult challenges you've had in your life, because you don't want to end up being a high-functioning, anxious person, because it is taking a toll. You might not be aware of it, but it is taking a toll.
That's true. So tell me, Charlene, what are some, you know, early signs of anxiety that people should be aware of? How do I know, it's hit now? How do I look out for those signs?
Well, definitely you need to pay attention to that feeling we spoke about, where on the surface of it, everything's okay. You know, your work is going well, family is okay, everything is relatively well, but there's something on the back burner that just keeps ticking away, like, hey, I'm worried. Hey, I'm stressed about something. Mm. You know, it's that feeling, people speak about this, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you've got that pit in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know where it's coming from. Where is this feeling coming from? And it's unfortunately one of the frustrating things about anxiety, because it makes it so difficult to understand, but why? What is causing this feeling? I'm okay. Why am I feeling on edge? So pay attention to that. It's very obvious things, like if you're finding it hard to focus on your work, on your daily activities, your mind keeps jumping from one thing to another. You might notice small things that kind of start to bug you a lot that didn't used to annoy you before. There's the physical symptoms we spoke about, you know, the tension, the muscle tension. You might notice like there's a jaw tension. I was reading about this, that you might not even realize you're doing it, but suddenly you realize your jaw is clenched. But why?
Hmm.
You might notice your shoulders are always hunched. You know, it's that muscle tension, that tightness in your neck. It's the feeling tired all the time. You're feeling tired, you're having trouble sleeping. Even when you do sleep, actually, you wake up and you're not feeling great. You know, you feel like, but you didn't even get enough sleep. And one of the biggest things, obviously, is when you start to notice that you are avoiding certain places, certain people, certain activities, because it triggers some sort of anxiety response in yourself.
Sure. That's really interesting, I must say, and calls for us to be more vigilant as well. So how does one get help for anxiety, Charlene, or just try to manage it better? How can we navigate it?
So just to keep harping on this about the high-functioning anxious person, okay? They have everything together on the outside. They're busy. They appear successful. But inside, they're constantly battling that stress, that worry, that tension. So this is, unfortunately, it's one of those scary things, because they don't even realize sometimes that they're in this state of anxiety all the time.
Mm.
So it makes it harder to ask for help or even realize that what they're feeling, it's more than just everyday stress. We all have stress, but this is, you know, stress intensified.
Mm.
So managing anxiety, whether it's high functioning or more obvious, it has to start with recognizing and accepting, look, it's okay to struggle. There is help.
Yeah.
Once you've done the recognition step, talking to people, and it doesn't have to be a friend, it can actually be a therapist. It can be online therapy if you don't want to have face-to-face conversations. And the helpful thing with professional therapists is they'll suggest very specific and targeted techniques, like there's cognitive behavioral therapy or there's exposure therapy. So they will find something that will help your specific type of anxiety. And that's the nice thing with professional therapists, which is kind of a step above just speaking to someone, because you're actually getting targeted help for your condition.
Mm.
Okay, so with the other thing to mention is, you know, in many cases, the therapist might prescribe a specific medication. And many times the medication, it works fine for most people. The thing, though, is that sometimes it is a bit of a trial and error, because it might not work immediately. Or you might even have certain side effects and you'll have to try another medication.
Mm.
But therapy and medication is where a lot of people start. I do want to say, let's go back to our theme song on this, is that if you invest in your health, you'll do a lot to mitigate these factors.
Which
means, you know, really taking the time to eat well, to exercise regularly, to get good quality sleep. I know it's very boring. We've said this. It's not unique, but it works, okay?
Exactly.
These little health habits, they can help with anxiety. And I'm not saying they're going to cure it if you've got a serious anxiety disorder, but it can at least make a dent in the problem.
Interesting. Charlene, more of these tips and information. How do you reach out to your team?
Actually, before that, I want to mention something we've also spoken about a lot, is that a lot of anxiety for many people comes from not having boundaries in place. And saying no when you feel that you're anxious about something, that's not a selfish thing to do. It's smart, okay? And a lot of us, we tend to stay busy to avoid our anxious thoughts, but that can actually make things worse. So at the end of the day, you've got to identify what your anxiety triggers are. And if that means that you cannot interact with people on a social level every single weekend because that makes you anxious, then that's something that you've got to set a boundary to. You can say no. You can figure out your anxiety triggers. You can figure out what makes you feel more comfortable. And whatever that is, do more of that, because it's your mental health, so you have to take the responsibility for it.
Sure. Listen, if anything, you're making me think to myself, I need to be in a better mental shape myself and try look out for those signs, not because we are looking out for trouble, but because we need to take better care of our mental health.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned your kids, and these are things that also children pick up on. And we spoke about the statistics and whatever, but besides that, children are more stressed also. They're picking up on these things. It's not just anxiety or whatever. Children are growing up in these stressful environments. They're experiencing childhood stress. They're experiencing childhood depression. And you can be a healthier role model for your child, for, you know, children in your family, whatever it is. But you've got to lead by example. So if you show your kids that this is what I do to take care of my mental health, it's something that you pass on to them, and they start taking and they start growing up taking care of themselves on that level.
Oh, wow. Charlene, thank you, my lovey. We're running out of time, but thank you. Thank you for your time, and thanks for your wisdom and, you know, just always spending time with us every single Wednesday. And lastly, I'm not going to let you go. Details to your website once again.
Yes, please invest in your health. Let's start by going to wellbeingsafrica.com. We have a ton of content, nutrition, mental health, women's health, everything. It's just basically an A to Z for all your health needs. So thank you so much for having me, Luco. I'm glad we got to have this segment.
Oh, man, absolutely grateful. Thank you so much, Charlene, and have a great afternoon further.
Thank you. Take care, Luco. Bye.
Radio Pulpit connects generations with a message of hope and faith. From South Africans at home to loved ones abroad, we share the good news in their language. Support our mission to reach hearts worldwide. Simply SMS GIVE and your amount to 37871, or send a WhatsApp to 082-657-2729. Let's bring the gospel closer to families, children, and grandchildren, no matter where they are. Radio Pulpit, bringing faith to every generation. Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729, and our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.